But of course, all was not well. Not really. She was already in her fourth month, and soon it would be obvious that she was going to have a child. Did we want the Messiah to have the reputation of being a, shall I say, somewhat irregular baby? And if he was to save his people from their sins, how could he himself be thought of as a child of sin, even if everyone would believe that it was a very minor sin? And then as we talked, it occurred to us that it would be difficult to convince anyone that the prince prophesied to lead all of Israel would come from Galilee. The Judeans consider Galileans almost Gentiles, as you know, Matthew. True, we were both direct descendants of David, but who would believe it? Who does believe it? You've heard them. After a good deal of discussion, we decided that it would be best if we moved to Bethlehem, so that Jesus, we had already begun calling him Jesus, would be born there. Then the question of whether he was David's descendant or not would not even arise. I had heard rumors that the emperor was thinking of having a census of the whole world, and we thought that if we were in Bethlehem when it occurred, then he would be registered as having come from Bethlehem and not from some place like Nazareth in Galilee that no one had ever heard of. As it turned out, you may remember, the actual census of the area did not take place until Jesus was 10 or so, and by that time we were no longer in Bethlehem. The Lord has his own way of doing things. He does indeed. But that was a large part of our reason for going there. Well, I had a number of commissions that I had to finish. I was building a house for Jacob and his family and had agreed to make some furniture for 3 or 4 other people. I did not think that I should simply abandon what I had promised, and so I completed the work before I left, which was a good thing because it gave us enough money to move there and find a small place to live while I built our house. But it delayed us. Meanwhile, Mary stayed inside. At first, people understood that she was making our house ready, and then when we let word get out that we were going to move, we had to, if for no other reason than that I was refusing new work. They thought she was busy preparing for that. And then, of course, they thought that she was, as all women a few months after marriage are apt to be. The result, in any case, was that no one saw her, but no one was surprised. One evening, then, we left. It was very late in her time, but I could not finish my work sooner. She assured me that the journey would not cause any harm, and by that time I had learned to trust a bit more than previously. The trip itself was uneventful, but it was clear when we arrived that the baby was due that very day. She was already experiencing the signs when we were in sight of Bethlehem. I went to the inn and asked if they had private quarters. It was unthinkable for her to be giving birth in the common room where everybody slept, with everyone milling around. They told me that there were no such accommodations available. I did not know what to do. I was desperate. As I turned away, I happened to notice the stable by the side of the inn. It seemed secluded and was practically empty, with only the inn's ox there. I returned and asked if we could use the stable for the night until we could find a suitable place, and the innkeeper looked at Mary and understood, and told us that he had no difficulty with that, and that he would not even charge us for the space. He seemed to think that he had done us a very great favor, as he had, I suppose, from our point of view. So I went into the stable and cleaned it up as well as I could. There were 2 rooms in it, and I put the ox and our little donkey in one, with a low door between them and us, that they kept looking over, and spread clean straw on the floor and made a bed of sorts in the corner. I was chagrined. I was supposed to be their protector, and the best I could do was a stable. But there was nothing else, and so we had to make what we could of it. I then asked Mary, who had begun labor, but did not seem yet in any distress, whether I should go now for the midwife. And she laughed at the concerned look on my face and told me quite calmly and matter-of-factly that she needed no midwife, that everything would be fine, that I was to heat some water over a fire to bathe the baby and not to worry. I must trust, I said, with a touch of bitterness. She smiled and answered, of course. It was obvious that she was working hard, but was quite calm about it. I asked if the pain was very bad, and she answered, there is no pain, Joseph. It is hard work, but I am used to hard work. She asked if she could grasp my arm to help her do what she was doing, and naturally I was overjoyed to be of at least some help. I could tell the effort she was making by how firmly she squeezed my forearm. But she kept saying that there was no pain. Finally, she told me to be ready to take the baby in my hands when he emerged. And then I held the Son of God, the offspring of the Supreme Being, in these hands. I was the first to hold the Messiah, the Prince who will save the world from its sins. It was, well, there's nothing one can say to describe it. And there was no blood. No blood at all. Though he was, of course, completely soaked. And then there was the cord. I knew not what to do, and Mary looked over at me, laughing at my consternation, though feebly because she was exhausted, and said, cut it. No, no, not there. I had taken out my knife. He fit in one single hand and was about to cut the cord next to his body, and she said, bring him here to me. I brought him over, and she showed me where to cut the cord. This was the first drop of blood that was shed as I live. And she said, with a twinkle in her voice, here, let me tie it. It is better for hands that sew to tie the cord than for hands that carve planks. So she tied the cord and immediately began to feed him. Not even in heaven can there be a sight more beautiful. That whole night was one wonder after another. But she was tired, and when she had fed them and wrapped the baby, I put him in the manger, which I had filled with the softest hay I could find, and she lay back and slept. I simply sat, looking at him. And he looked at me. I swear he did. I happened to glance out the entrance of the little cave. And there on the eastern horizon was a star, brighter than any I had ever seen. I thought, so it is true then. Because I did not believe it even then, not really, not completely. Sometimes I wonder if I believe it even now. One believes, but one does not believe somehow, even when one sees. He told me once not to concern myself with it, and so I do not, but, well, there it is. Toward dawn, some shepherds arrived with the story that they had seen a vision of angels as they were out in the fields, telling them that the Messiah and their master had been born in Bethlehem, which was about an hour's walk away, and that as a sign of this, they would find an infant lying in a manger. And then, they said, the angels chanted songs, giving glory to God. They said, they were not very intelligent, you know, in the way of most shepherds, that they discussed what they had seen for quite a while and then decided that they had probably been told to come and see for themselves. And of course, as soon as they saw Jesus in the manger, they were convinced that something great had happened and went away and told everyone they could find about it. No one believed them, of course. They thought that they had had a bit too much wine to warm themselves during the night, because it was quite cold, though the stable was comfortable enough with the little fire I'd made. We stayed in the stable for the next 2 days, while I went out to find some place that would take us in, while I bought some land and began to build our own house. It would be difficult, starting over from nothing, but a carpenter can always find something to do, and my work on the house turned out to be a good advertisement of my skill. It took several months to have the house ready, but finally we moved in, and life seemed to be settling down into a kind of normalcy. Nothing came of the fuss the shepherds made, and Mary and I thought it was all for the best, since King Herod would not take kindly to the announcement that a rival had been born almost under his nose. The star was still there, steadily higher in the sky at dawn each day. But no one, of course, thought it had anything to do with us. We were simply a new family that had moved in. When Jesus was a year and a half old, however, suddenly some sages appeared out of nowhere, arriving just before dawn, looking up at the sky where the star was now directly overhead. They knocked, waking Jesus, and as we sleepily hastened to open to them, they fell to their knees at the sight of him. They told us that over a year ago they had seen the star in the east, and after discussing it at length, as clearly important, they had pored over their books and come to the conclusion that the king of the Jewish people had been born. Their sources indicated that he would be the salvation somehow of the whole world, and so they had decided to come and pay him homage. We did not know quite what to say. They were a bit taken aback when they saw nothing but an ordinary house, with no one but a carpenter as its master, and not even a slave to answer the door. For a few brief moments, they said, they thought they might have made a mistake, but they had made inquiries in Jerusalem and learned that the Messiah was to come from Bethlehem. They then found that no one else had been born in Bethlehem at the precise time that seemed indicated by the star. It is a small town, after all. And as they inquired further, they heard people telling of the fantastic tale that the shepherds had spread, which had already acquired all sorts of embellishment, but they were told not to believe a word of it. We, of course, invited them in, and they stayed for a short time, but insisted on not troubling us for the night, because they could see how small the house was. And as they left, they opened the chest they were carrying. It was clear that they could find accommodation wherever and whenever they wanted, and offered us, him, gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, asking us to be sure to tell him what they had done once he was old enough to remember it. And we are certain, they said, that he will favor us when he comes into his kingdom. And then they went away. The neighbors all crowded around, asking what they wanted. And we told them that they had made some inquiries of us, and apparently found out what they wanted to know, because they had left. Everyone was curious as to what they were asking about, which made me a bit nervous because of the king. And in fact, that very night I had another of those dreams, and was told to leave immediately for Egypt, because King Herod was going to try to kill Jesus. I woke Mary and told her what had happened, and as it turned out, she had a brother who had gone to live in Alexandria, who would take us in, at least for a while. So once again we left, and I faced the prospect of starting over for the second time. Fortunately, the gifts we had just received made us rather wealthy, and we were able to find a suitable house after only a day or two, and hire a language teacher and someone to instruct me in Egyptian carpentry, which is quite different from what we practice here. I learned a great deal there, though I must confess I did not do much work. Jesus, who was beginning to speak, was using double words for everything, the Hebrew followed by the Egyptian. He seemed to think of one as the home word and the other as the outside one. Of course, we realized that our stay was only temporary, since Jesus was to save our people, after all. We remained in Egypt for 2 years, I think it was, and I was beginning to become established once again when word came that Herod had died, and I had yet another dream telling me to go back to the land of my ancestors. So we said goodbye to our new friends, and Jesus to his little cousin James, and returned, planning to go back to our house in Bethlehem. But when we heard that Herod's son had taken over from his father, and that he was as bad as the first Herod, if not worse, we thought it better to stay out of Judea altogether and return to Galilee and Nazareth, where Mary and I were already known, and I would not have to begin life over once more. The people welcomed us back, of course, and we were able to buy back our old house, using the last of the gift money, and settled in quite comfortably, as you saw, Matthew, when you came to us to have your house furnished. Jesus must have been 4 or 5 by that time, and as it happened, no one bothered to wonder whether his birth might have been a bit too early. They were all too interested in his command of Egyptian. So it all worked out for the best, at least from my point of view, though Jesus now has to cope with being called a Galilean. I have always liked Nazareth, and never felt at home in Judea, still less in Egypt. What was it like being his parent and teaching him, you ask? It was a bit terrifying to contemplate beforehand, I must confess, but I soon found out that he had to learn almost like everyone else. I say almost. It's difficult to describe. It is not that he knew things beforehand exactly, but he recognized things. I would show him some new technique in handling wood, and his eyes would light up as if to say, "Ah, yes, that is what it is." And if I happened to try to pass on to him a bad habit that I had acquired, he would look at me politely but quizzically, asking with his expression, "Do you really mean that?" And I would have to go over what I had said and realize that I had to rethink it. I learned a great deal from him, not that he actually taught me, but he knew the taste of what is true and false, if I may put it that way. I suppose it's his father's influence. As I say, I understand very little about him. Even less now, of course, than ever. A good deal less, now that Jesus is doing what he was clearly meant to do from the beginning. And what do I feel now? I feel, in a sense, a little bit like Moses. I am allowed to see the promised land, but for some reason I will not be crossing over. Oh well. I suppose that too is for the best. At least he says so. I can trust somewhat more now than I did at the beginning.